This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Maas Cohen in for Terry Gross.
I believe in miracles. Where you from? You sexy thing, sexy thing, you. I believe in miracles. Since you came along, you sexy thing.
Who would have thought that a low-budget film about unemployed steelworkers who hatch a plan for a strip show to raise some quick cash would become a big hit? The Full Monty has been packing in audiences not only in England and the States, but also in Mexico, Japan, Greece, Estonia, and Singapore. The film has received 4 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenwriter, and Best Score. The film is about a group of men living on the dole in Sheffield, England. The steel mill has closed down and they find themselves faced with mounting debts and no prospects for work. Desperate for money and inspired by the male stripping group, the Chippendales, they decide to go one step further and bear it all at a show for the women in their neighborhood. Simon Beaufoy wrote the screenplay for The Full Monty. This is his first feature film, although he's made a number of documentaries and short films. I asked him where the idea for The Full Monty came from.
The producer of The Full Monty, a man called Alberto Pasolini, became fascinated with the idea of male strippers. He came from Italy, came to England and saw male stripping and was completely bemused and puzzled by it. I mean, he came to me and he said this would never happen in Italy. Italian men would never let their wives and partners go out to see men taking their clothes off. And he said, what on earth is happening in Britain that this is happening? You know, what's happening to the British male? Which kicked off my whole interest in the film, really. You know, the film is about what's happening to the British man.
Well, we meet the men who become part of this stripping review early on in the film, and they're sitting around and talking about their lives. Let's play that clip, and then we can talk a little bit more.
I tell you, when women start pissing like us, that's it. We're finished, Dave. Extincto.
Yeah, I mean, how? You know, how?
Genetic mutations, isn't it? They're turning into us.
A few years and men won't exist, except in the zoo or something. I mean, we're not needed no more, are we? Obsolete. Dinosaurs. Yesterday's news.
Like skateboards.
Button it, you lot. Some of us are trying to get a job.
Hey, and it says no smoking in here.
Oh, and it says job club up there. Remember the last time you saw one of them f***ing walk in?
You forget, Gerald, you're not our foreman anymore. You're just like the rest of us. Scrap.
Listening to that scene, it's clear that these men feel emasculated. And I wonder, as you wrote that, what you wanted to say.
I think there's a very important thing happening in, certainly in Britain, I reckon in every single developed country in the world, where women have changed the role that they used to perform and men have lost the role that they used to perform. In days gone by, you know, men knew what they had to do in life. They had to go out, get a job, support the family, bring home the money. And that's no longer the case. And I, in my experience, a lot of men are kind of wandering around, very lost, thinking, well, what is my role? If my wife goes out to work and I don't even have a job, you know, where does that leave me as the traditional breadwinner? You know, I used to have a role in life. I brought home the money. That's what I did. That's where I gained my respect from my family and from my colleagues, was to work, bring home the money, bring up the children. And when that disappears, as it has done in Britain, I think a lot of men are lost and are kind of wondering, you know, what role is there for me? Where do I go now without a job?
We're having this very serious conversation, and The Full Monty is also a very funny film. And I really appreciated the way you went from humor to pathos, from something funny to, if you thought about it, something very sad. Is that what you were trying to do, was to kind of play with those two tensions of humor, comedy, and something a lot more serious than that?
Yeah, I mean, I very specifically wanted to write a political film. Not with a capital P, but with a small p. I wanted to write a film about gender politics. And stripping seemed a perfect example of you know, the way roles between men and women have changed. You know, 20 years ago, you would never get men taking their clothes off for women. It was always the other way round. And So it seemed a very funny, but also a very poignant example of the way things are changing between men and women, these role reversals that are happening in society.
I think one scene kind of typifies, there are many kinds of humor in this, including an interesting and actually very funny physical humor, but there's a scene where the guys have stolen a video of Flashdance, and they're watching that to get some ideas for their review, and Dave, one of the guys, is looking at it and basically criticizing her welding techniques as opposed to looking at her dancing style. And I just really like that, again, that tension between those two ideas.
Yeah, I mean, all the way through, I want every scene possible, I wanted the message to come through, as well as it being a funny film about men and a gang of people getting together to take their clothes off. I wanted that message always to be in the film about, you know, what is happening to men. I mean, Dave sits there and watches this woman welding, and, you know, to him, that's incredibly insulting. That was his job, that was his father's job, and probably his grandfather's job as welders in the steel industry. And then to see this woman kind of shake off her hair and suddenly she's a woman who's welding, you know, utterly insulting to a man like that. I just had a lot of fun with that. I mean, it amused me to think Flashdance, this scene about a dancer, has also got welding in. I mean, to me,
exactly.
That was perfect. That summed up everything to me.
Well, there's another scene, too, and this is really a wordless scene. It's a much more physical humor. And again, these guys are together waiting in line for their unemployment check, and they begin to hear some music, and very slowly they begin just the tiniest snatches of their stripping routine, and it is hilarious.
Again, that summed up the film for me. When I thought of that scene very early on in the writing process, and I thought, you know, come what may, that scene is going in the film. Because to me, it just summed everything up. These guys standing in line to pick up their dole check, and just recognizing a song and just beginning to dance, and that kind of feeling overtaking them. So you've got this sense that, you know, even though they're doing the most depressing thing that they, you know, in their lives, which is standing there unemployed with the rest of their colleagues from the steelworks, there's something going on behind. They're thinking, we can break out of this, you know, we're doing something, we're different from the rest of the people here.
Does it disturb you, though, that this film has been promoted largely as you know, a funny import from England?
Well, it certainly surprised me, yeah. I mean, everyone sees it as a feel-good comedy about strippers, and
right.
I think there's 3 minutes stripping in the film, you know. It isn't a film about strippers, it's a film about men. I hope people get that. I hope they get more than the laughter. Tony Blair, the Prime Minister back in Britain, is kind of promoting it as this great example of the kind of British get-up-and-go spirit. These guys go out and go stripping and make some money. And it seems to me he's missed the point entirely. These people are so desperate that they have to take their clothes off. They don't want to do that. You know, and come the day after the strip, they're back on the dole. And so for him to be sort of championing it as a great example of British entrepreneurialism seems to me to be missing the point entirely. So I don't know. I hope people are getting the message behind the laughs, but I'm slightly worried that they're not.
You say you don't normally write comedy, but are there certain comedians or certain situations that you find humor in?
I grew up in Yorkshire, and there's something very specifically dry about the Yorkshire sense of humor. And, you know, kind of the worse things get, they have this perverse enjoyment of desperate situations. And I love that sense of humor where the worse things get, the funnier the jokes get. It's that kind of, the only thing we've got now is humour to carry us through this situation. Over the years, you know, the north of England's had a desperate time over the years, especially in the last 25 years. And there is this incredible dry humour that I thought was very specific to Yorkshire. I mean, in fact, you know, everyone in England gets it, everyone in Finland gets it, everyone in America gets it, which is fantastic that they understand the dryness of the humour. But that is my favourite type of humour, that kind of, in adversity, we'll crack a joke, and the worse things get, the funnier I'll be.
Has this film been shown in Sheffield?
Yeah, interestingly. We premiered the film in Sheffield, and for the first 20 minutes, there was absolute silence in the audience. They were looking at their city on the screen and thinking, yeah, this is Sheffield. Yeah, we're unemployed. Yeah, nothing funny here. And it took them an awful long time to sort of get into the spirit of watching a film rather than watching their own lives on the screen. So it was really interesting. Myself and the director was, as usual, standing at the back, sort of listening to see what the audience were thinking, and we thought we were going to get lynched to begin with, because they just took the film very, very seriously. You know, unemployment is not funny to them. And, you know, by the end, they were all laughing. They loved it as much as any other audience. But to begin with, they thought, you know, this isn't funny. This is our lives.
Simon Beaufoy is our guest. He just received an Oscar nomination for his screenplay for The Full Monty. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Simon Beaufoy. He wrote the screenplay for The Full Monty. You know, I didn't know what The Full Monty meant, being an American. And I wonder how many American audiences literally had no idea what they were going to get themselves into, or literally what the story was about. Is this a phrase that's used in England by regular folks?
No, it's very specifically a North of England phrase. And bizarrely, it's associated with big breakfasts, I beg your pardon.
How do you mean that?
Quite often on a menu, if you go into a cafe and want your eggs, bacon, sausage, beans, the full Monty, it's called a full Monty breakfast, meaning you get everything. So it survived in that form, but actually the phrase was dying out. Interestingly, everybody uses the phrase now, but at the time, very few people, even in Britain, knew what it meant.
Have you ever been to a Chippendale show? Did you have to do research for this?
Do you know, perversely, I didn't want to see them because I really wasn't interested in the whole, the strip act per se, didn't interest me. When the producer came to me and said, do you want to write a film about male stripping? I thought, no, I really don't. You know, I kind of, visions of a male version of Showgirls flashed in front of me and I thought, that is not what I want to write about. So in this perverse way, I kind of steered clear of anything to do with stripping. I mean, having said that, I sent my girlfriend along to see the show and I just wanted to know what it felt like to be in the audience. That, to me, that was more interesting, what she felt like as a woman going to see a show like that.
What'd she say?
And, well, interestingly, it's very different from men going to see a woman strip. It's not a sexy thing. It's not erotic at all. They go for a really good laugh. You know, it's a classic thing that a lot of girls do after they get out of work on a Friday night. You know, go and have a few drinks, get a bit beard up, and then go and have a real laugh and a scream at the strippers. But it's not erotic at all. It's just really good, raucous fun.
How much, though, did you think about being buck naked and in front of strangers? I mean, what that's about. And in a sense, the film is always leading up to this performance they're going to give and the kinds of nervousness and anxieties that they go through before the performance.
Yeah, I mean, taking your clothes off is a tremendously good metaphor for the vulnerability of these men. You know, working class men, well, men in general, they find it very difficult to talk about their emotions and feelings. And when you have to take your clothes off with these guys, you know, and you all sit down in a room and say, gosh, we're going to have to do this. It's a tremendously good kickoff point to start examining feelings and emotions and to get men to talk to each other, which, you know, is one of the most impossible things in the world. To get them to talk about, you know, serious things other than the football. To get them to talk about, you know, sexual problems or problems at home with the family, or, you know, these are things that guys don't talk about. They go, yeah, everything's fine, no problem, another beer.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get these people in a sort of almost life-threatening situation of having to take their kit off in front of all their mates from work, you're opening up people, you know, and you're laying them bare metaphorically and literally.
Let me ask you a little bit about yourself and tell us where you grew up in England.
Well, I was born and brought up in Keighley, which is a town about 30 miles north of Sheffield. And spent most of my life in Yorkshire, and which is where all these characters come from. And then I started off in documentaries, which I think is why my films are very much character-led rather than sort of plot-led. As a documentary maker, you get very interested in people. And you examine them very closely because, you know, that's your stock in trade is people rather than big stories. And then there was no workaround. In the same way, there's no work for any steel workers in Sheffield. You know, 5-6 years ago, there was no work for documentary makers. So I just sat down and started writing.
Hmm. This film is about steel workers, and in some of your other work, you've looked at blue collar workers. You're a writer, and I wonder whether you left that life behind, whether you came from a family of blue collar workers, and if that was ever an option for you.
I didn't come from blue-collar workers. I came from a family of teachers, but, you know, while I've been growing up, I've done a lot of blue-collar jobs, a lot of cleaning jobs, kind of rubbing down machines, that sort of work. And that's where I came into contact with the Gazzies and Daves of my films.
From people that you met, you knew, that you worked with.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, quite often at tea breaks, you're sitting around with a gang of men, a gang of blokes, all discussing the paper, discussing this, that and everything, sitting around, you know, a lot of banter, a lot of criticism, a lot of swearing at each other, all of that stuff. And that's where I got my desire to write about those people, because they're very funny, they're very sharp, and they're very vulnerable. And that's but they won't show their vulnerability, and that's what's interesting. They'll all sit there and be, you know, kind of big hunky men over their mugs of tea, but actually, there, you know, there are things going on in their lives which they would want to talk about but can't. And as a writer, that's a fascinating world.
Did you lift some of those conversations and use them in the film?
No, I mean, it's a funny process writing. You know, half of those characters are real people, half are imagined, you know, they're creations of mine, and they're amalgams of, you know, 100 different people in one character. So, you know, and there are bits of me in all of those characters. You know, Dave and his weight problem is completely me worrying about getting too fat, and but he's an amalgam of 1,000 people I've met, you know. So it isn't quite straightforward as that.
Now, after the Full Monty and you got an Oscar nomination, how has your life changed?
The phone never stops ringing.
What do they want?
I've stopped writing. That's the problem. The Oscar nomination has meant that I can't be a writer anymore because the phone rings all day.
Well, what do they want? What are people calling you up for?
They want Monty's 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 at the moment. You know, can the gang go rock climbing? Can they rob a bank? Can they become pastry chefs? You know, you name it, they can do it. So that's become a little trying.
Is there an absolute no to the Full Monty 2?
Well, do you know, the frightening thing is that I no longer own those characters, though they came out of my head. The studio now owns those characters, and there's an awful lot of financial pressure on them to do a Monty 2. And I can't stop them. Yeah. So maybe the best thing is for me to go along and do it in the hope that it'll be at least me writing my own characters.
Well, when you have meetings, though, and I assume when you're in Hollywood in L.A., there are a lot of times in meetings. What do people talk about?
What, to me specifically?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we skirt Monty 2, 3, and 4 conversations. And yeah, obviously, I've been writing for a long time, and I have other projects that I want to get finance for. So, and ironically, there's been a sort of reverse effect with the Monty phenomenon. It's now very difficult for me to give hand a script over the table that's a serious film, because there's expectation that I'm now a comedy writer. And actually, I've written a lot of very serious films. And somehow, there's a level of expectation and a level of disappointment that happens when they get a film that isn't full of people taking their clothes off and lots of jokes. So I'm having to sort of overcome the Monty factor.
What are some films? What's your next film, or what's the film you're trying to sell right now?
It's called The Darkest Light, and it's a very low budget British film. Again, set it up in the north of England, but it's about three children who see a vision on a moor one day, or what they're told is a vision. They just see something, and they're not quite sure what it is. And one of the children is dying of leukemia. And the other children think that this is a vision that must have come to save this child. You know, the logic of a vision is that there's got to be a reason for a miracle to happen, and that this child's going to get better. And being me in my rather tragic way, he doesn't get better. So it's a film about faith and childhood and big issues, very difficult issues.
Are these issues that you personally have struggled with or are struggling to understand?
Yeah, I think faith is a very, very interesting thing to write about. And it seems particularly relevant as, you know, we're coming towards the end of the millennium. I think faith is an issue that's uppermost in people's minds now. They're searching for something. Christianity doesn't, you know, it doesn't have the power that it once had. And people are looking for something. They want something to believe in, and they're not quite sure where to find it. When Princess Diana died in England, there was this extraordinary upsurge of a kind of unfocused faith. They almost canonized her when she died. And I was fascinated to see, you know, the streets lined with flowers and these sort of religious messages to her. And she wasn't a religious person, but people need to believe. There's a desperate need in society for people to believe.
What are you going to do on the night of the Academy Awards? Are you going to come back to the States? Are you going to be watching on your telly at home, or what?
No, I'm coming back out here myself and my girlfriend. I'm very much looking forward to that. That's just going to be a very good party.
Are you going to wear anything in particular?
Well, as it's the full Monty, I thought I'd wear nothing except a G-string for the evening.
Well, Simon Beaufoy, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
My pleasure.
Filmmaker and screenwriter Simon Beaufoy received an Oscar nomination for his screenplay for The Full Monty. I'm Marty Moscowane, and this is Fresh Air.